You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
The JSE has been in a state of flux recently, and someone I haven't spoken to for around about 4 weeks is Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective in Johannesburg to give us his perspective on what has happened in the interim period, in the period since we last spoke. And Graham, I must say, and we have to put this out up front rather than out front, up front, that certain of the stocks that have been under pressure, you hold. You must have been tearing your hair out and saying, what on earth is going on? Just give us a general view of the state of affairs on the JSE, please.
It's been horrible. It's been bloody awful. I think a lot of anxiety around in South Africa, you know, just chatting to clients and people in the markets, you know, even people who are sort of, have been long-term South Africa bulls and have been philosophical. More recently, if you look at the fight between the president and Busisiwe Mkhwebane and, you know, the infighting in the ANC and, you know, the mess that is Eskom, a lot of negativity suddenly. People saying, you know, maybe we need to go to the IMF. And, yeah, a very somber mood. Yes. And I think in large part, if you look at the rand, for example, we, I think as a country, sort of almost take our mood from that. And, you know, the rand, of course, has been hit by a couple of SA-specific things, but you've also had places like Argentina and others, you know, India as well, all coming under quite a lot of pressure. So I don't think it's just a South Africa story. And paradoxically, people seem quite happy to, you know, buy 10-year German bunds at minus 0.5, 0.6%, but, you know, want no part of South African 10 years at 8.5%. So it's a very difficult time. I think there's a lot of angst around. I think there's a growing sense that maybe Trump has just completely miscalculated everything, and he pushed the Chinese, particularly Xi Jinping, just too far. And they're saying, okay, well, you know, we'd really only have to live with this for another year and a bit, and if things go reasonably well or according to plan, then we'll be negotiating with a new president. But in the meantime, it's chaos. It's absolute chaos on all asset markets.
Yeah, don't you think that the chaotic state of the world's bond markets, and also in the very, very sort of micro short term, you look at the S&P futures today. This morning they were up around about 10, then they went up to around about 22, 23 positive, then they were down around about 10, and now here they are up 12. It's all over the place. I don't think anybody knows how to behave at the moment, and that is, to me, quite disturbing.
Well, I think, Lindsay, the problem that we're facing is, you know, central bankers seem to have taken the classic monetary policy textbook and thrown it out the window. You know, more than a quarter of the world's debt is now giving you negative yield. And that just makes absolutely no sense. And in spite of that, people continue to buy, you know, German bunds at negative a half or thereabouts, and seem quite philosophical about the fact that they may go to minus 1%. So I think when you're sitting in a world like that, and one in which, if you look at some of the Chinese data out in the last day or so, not looking great, if you look particularly at industrial production, but even things like retail sales, you know, not looking spectacular, although we still have to say the economy there is growing theoretically at 6.2%. But I think there's a real fear that that the German economy is if it's not already well on its way to recession, it soon will be. And I think growing sense, probably a 4 in 10 chance that within a year we'll have a recession in the US. And people then in that context just don't want to be in growth assets. So I think people are desperately trying to figure out what's going to come from Trump next. And I think generally there's a lot of risk aversion. And I think people are saying, well, you know, we don't care if we get no yield or negative yield. Let's just, you know, invest $1 million and hopefully get back almost $1 million, which, you know, if you think about the FANGs and some global equity markets, maybe the prospects are not quite so rosy, because valuations are still fairly lofty in some places. And, you know, if we get a recession in the U.S., then, you know, it's impossible to expect any real earnings growth. So I think just a lot of anxiety, and obviously being felt most in emerging markets. And of course, emerging markets are doing a bit, including what's happening in Hong Kong, to just cause a lot of discomfort. So I think the reality of it is, a lot of business people in the US are also starting to bleat about the fact that, you know, the economic policy set by tweet is very counterproductive. And I think quite a few of the business leaders there are probably the ones that are responsible for the deferral of the tariffs on some of the consumer goods until the middle of December. But yeah, I think there's no visibility about where anything's likely to be in terms of economic growth 6 months or a year from now. And that's the reason the market just sort of is trying to find some sort of direction. But if I may, if you look on a 3-year view, the NASDAQ, in spite of, let's say what a weakness in the last month of about 6%, the NASDAQ's still up 55-odd% on a 3-year rolling view. So, I think we must also see it in context that some equity markets have done well, and that's probably in itself adding to some of the anxiety that people just don't feel comfortable with the realistic earnings growth prospects. And, you know, there have been a couple of more recent IPOs that have sort of flopped. And I think people are starting to become very, very suspicious, particularly of those indices that that are propped up by business models and counters that whose fortunes can change quite quickly, such as technology or investment banking or maybe even pharma.
Let me just give you an example of the volatility and the unplayable nature of the market at the moment. I'm looking at the top five major movers, and this is 4:05 on a Thursday afternoon, and this is according to sharenet.co.za. Standard Bank up 5%, Discovery up 5%, RMIH up 4.3%, Nedcor up 3.75%, Absa Group up 3.3%. These are all financial services companies. Suddenly they are booming. On the downside, we've got Goldfields after a trading update, or rather results, down 11.5%, Assore down 4.4%, Anglo American Platinum down 4.1%, and Kumba Iron Ore a 4.1% loser as well. And yet if you go back 2 or 3 days, you'll see an exact reversal of the top five, bottom five, according to ShareNet. This is a very, very difficult environment for, I suppose, short-term traders, but you're a long-term trader, but your long-term trading hasn't served you well, I don't think, when it comes to companies like Aspen and Discovery, because I know you're a holder of both of those companies, or rather, I think you are.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But, I was chatting to a client yesterday. So it's going to be a new account, and we sort of really just sat in cash for a considerable period of time. And, we're putting that money into a new company structure. And I said, look, I think the time is right. I think we need to get that broking account ready, because nobody's going to phone us or ring a bell and tell us, listen, Standard Bank has bottomed at whatever it is, 160 or 164. We've got to start nibbling on the way down. I think, if I may,
yes,
to a large extent, things like Anglo American and BHP were kind of on their own mission, and in many ways, courtesy mainly of the iron ore market, which we probably spoke about a month ago, we're looking very, very good. There's been some really massive falls, things like Sasol, you spoke about Aspen. I think in the case of Aspen, still a lot of fear around the debt, and of course the fine, the admission of guilt fine, let's call it, in the UK yesterday, doesn't help, because it sort of raises questions about, is this going to be an ongoing thing? Because, £8 million doesn't sound like a lot of money, but when you convert it back into rands, that just comes off the bottom line. But it also speaks possibly to the ethics of the business. But when you look at it, Lindsay, a company like Standard Bank, it was trading comfortably over 200 Rand. Then, of course, markets in South Africa, I think largely starting to price in a downgrade from the final ratings agency. That obviously is going to hurt the South African banks. And as you say, Standard Bank traded comfortably under 170. And today, I think you're starting to find a few bottom feeders coming in saying, at 170 Rand. It's on a sub 10 PE. It's a divvy yield of approaching six, similar story in Absa. So I think people just saying, you know what, the South African banking sector has been through, you know, Rubicon speeches. It's been through, you know, a transformation from an apartheid government to a new political order. We've been through global financial crises, and generally they've come out on the other side quite well. So I think, and that's the view we've been taking. So, you know, Standard Bank at $200, you know, on a 10-year view, you'll make money, but on a 2-year view, I'm not sure you're going to make much. But at 165, 170, I think you've got a fighting chance. And if you just look at those results, they weren't spectacular, and call them mildly positive in real terms. But, you know, suddenly this business is making over 30% of its money in the rest of Africa. And the cost base, I think, is on its way down. So the jaws hopefully will start going the right way for the first time in a long time. But I think it's been a very difficult time. I think for us particularly disappointing was Discovery. I think in large part on the NHI, but I don't think that explains all of it. I think that came at the same time as a lot of anxiety around China. Of course, Ping An is quite an important long-term driver for them,
yes.
But also just natural, or let's call it broad sell-off in EM assets. So, you know, it was like the perfect storm against them. But I still maintain, I think Discovery is one of the most exciting businesses that South Africa has ever created, and I think it's a business you want to own.
So what do you do before you go on? It's one of the best businesses, it's one of the best CEOs, it's one of the most exciting prospects, is essentially what you're saying. But the share price has halved. So that says to me, either the market's got it wrong now, or it had it wrong 2-3 years ago when it pushed it to 190 Rand per share. What was it? Is it wrong now, or was it wrong then?
Okay, so I'll say both. And this, I think, is part of our mantra, that 90% of the time markets are incorrectly priced. Share prices are never reflective of true value, or very, very seldom. So at 190 Rand a few years ago, it was completely overcooked. And now at 104, and the other day under 100, in fact, earlier today, under 100,
yes,
it too was mispriced. It's difficult to put a value on it because there obviously are quite a lot of moving parts. But if I consider the fact that Vitality, as of June 2018, had, I think it was 11 million subscribers. China is signing up at a rate of knots. I think there's a lot of good news there. A lot of money has been spent on the bank. So what I'm saying is my best guess of fair value on Discovery is probably 145, 150. But it's, you know, that's not to say it's going to go from 105 to there overnight. But my sense is that over the next 3 or 5 years, as the story unfolds and they diversify and more businesses partner with them because of their unique technology, I think it's a business that will go from strength to strength. But the reality of it is it still makes a lot of money in South Africa. It makes a fair amount of money. About 30% of earnings come from medical aid administration, NHI, obviously put the cat amongst the pigeons there, but it's still, I think you'll fast track 10 years and you'll look at this little wobble in the share price and say, fuck, can you remember the days when NHI was announced and, you know, you could have got this thing, you know, at 100 Rand. But my sense is that if you take a 10 or a 20 year view, you won't even notice that on the share price. It'll almost look like
you don't believe the NHI scam, do you? You don't believe the NHI thing, do you?
Well, I think we've got to be very careful as a country not to break something that is working. You know, at its core, I think we need to figure out a way in which the broader population can be given better quality medical care. I think we do need to figure out a way that we use private healthcare facilities better, because I think they are suboptimally used at the moment. But I think people like Discovery, with an incredible capability and experience in managing medical aid and trying to help manage costs, I think could play a key role in making an NHI work. Because if we're going to just simply try and throw you know, 100 or 200 billion rand into a pot and pray like hell that it will be sensibly managed and, you know, that the private hospitals and medical service providers are all just going to, you know, get on sides. So I think we're being a little bit delusional. So I don't think it's going to work quite as has been sort of set out. And I think a fair amount of careful work and thinking has to happen so that we don't destroy what is probably one of the world's best private medical health facilities or systems.
Aspen. You hold Aspen, don't you?
Yeah, sadly, yeah.
443 rand per share 5 years ago, and I'm not being nasty here, but it's just these are the shares, some of the shares, and these are the bad ones. You've also been piling into Naspers, and we'll talk about the good news story, which is Naspers. But 5 years ago, Aspen was 443 rand per share. Today, it was trading around about 65 rand per share, and if I look at the share performance. It's gone 443 5 years ago, 3 years ago, the high was 380, 2 years ago, 323, 1 year ago, 296, 6 months ago, 148, etc. It's been in a bear market for years and years and years. So there's obviously been something wrong, but people keep on buying it. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be buying it now, but 443 to 65, it's a hell of a move, Graham.
So I'll start out and say, just as I was saying with Discovery, you know, at 440, I remember having, or 420, having an argument with a friend of mine, also in the markets, who said, you can still buy them at 420. And I said, you're out of your mind, because there's no way they would deliver the kind of earnings growth that was necessary, circa 30%, to unravel that multiple sensibly. So we didn't hold them at 440, but we did start buying them, I think, at 260, 270.
Right.
And have sort of progressively added on the way down. Obviously, quite a lot has happened over the last few years. And I think a couple of things are happening here. One is the market is obviously afraid of the level of gearing, although my sense is with the sale of the Aussie business, which wasn't massive, but that together with the sale of the infant nutritionals business, you know, would bring us back in range with the covenants. And then hopefully we don't get a lot more fines and the like. So I think it's a better business today than it was 2 or 3 years ago. But I think what is necessary is a new, more clinical approach to the portfolio. So you're absolutely right. I mean, from 200 to 65, it's a massive fall. My best guess now on Aspen is, I think the bears are having an absolute field day in it.
Mm-hmm.
And as we speak now, as you say, sort of, just after 4 o'clock, it's sitting at about 68, so down about 1.3%. It's looking a little bit better. We're going to get results quite soon. We'll get results from Discovery as well. And I think we'll then see, you know, whether this sell-off is completely overdone or not. But as we see it, if you look at the anesthetics portfolio, you know, the high potency, the, you know, thrombosis portfolio and so on, we think it's a better portfolio of companies and products than they had before, which was mainly generic. But they need to execute better, and I think they need to treat the balance sheet with great care. And I think, you know, to be frank, breaching debt covenants is just not cool. I think, you know, you can't be expanding and buying things when you've already got too much debt to maintain your covenants. So let's see what the results look like. My best guess is this thing could gap up from, let's call it 70 rand to 100 rand very, very quickly. And we must remember it was trading at about 120 not long ago. So I think there's been a real sell-off. If you look at Discovery the other day, got hit on very, very significant volumes, and then it sort of stabilized. So I think right now there are lots of people that are sort of saying, well, what don't I know about Discovery or Aspen or, you know, any one of a range of companies? And the sellers, as often is the case, you know, foreigners come into our market over an extended period of time, and when they decide they want to sell for whatever reason, you know, it's the old adage of a lot of people trying to get out of a small gate. And in many cases, they've just made a an asset allocation decision to get out of South Africa or to get out of emerging markets or whatever the case might be. And price is irrelevant and they forget the lack of liquidity. But I suppose what I'm trying to say is in companies like Discovery, you want to take that lack of liquidity as an opportunity to acquire shares. And it's the same thing as, you know, we were able to buy some Standard Banks fairly cheaply the other day. And even if you look at what's happening in Naspers in the last, you know, day or so, it's come off a fair amount courtesy of, I think, disappointing revenues at 10 cents. So, you know, I think we must be careful not to assume that these prices are accurate reflections of value, just as, you know, at 440 Aspen was overcooked and at 180 Discovery was overcooked equally, you know, now at 105 or at 70, I think they are very, very heavily oversold. But, you know, we are facing quite a few headwinds. There's a real lack of economic growth. And I think pharma companies generally are being bullied, in inverted commas, by global national health systems that are sort of creaking under the weight. You've just seen, for example, the budget deficit figures from the U.S. You know, for the 10 months to June, and how Medicare expenditure, I think, was up 11%. So, yeah, clearly governments have to try and attack that cost base, and companies like Aspen are vulnerable. But I think our point is that, as Buffett always says, you know, price is what you pay and value is what you get. The key thing is to try and buy good companies. Let's be honest, businesses change, you know. It was a time when I thought Tiger Brands was a really great company. I changed that view probably 5 or 6 years ago. And at times where I thought, you know, Pick n Pay a few years ago was a very good business. So I think businesses do change, and MTN would be another example. But our view is we're not going to change our mind simply because the share price goes down. We change our mind when we see, let's call it, real evidence that the business model has changed, or, you know, there's a reason, like in the case of MTN, what we thought was complete mismanagement of that Nigerian, you know, SIM card deactivation story that prompted us to get out. But, you know, Lindsay, there's one of two ways of looking at this chaos and volatility. You can either be panicked into inaction or selling, or you can say, you know what, a lot of these companies have never looked as cheap as they are right now. I mean, you can throw a City Lodge into that mix as well.
Yes.
And we'll get results from them very soon. And say, you know what, good businesses that have been investing in themselves counter-cyclically, eventually when the tide turns, you can get a double kicker. And those are the things I think that we ultimately are looking for. And what is also encouraging, if I may, is you know, quite a few of the small caps we've been accumulating over the last few years have actually been holding up quite well in this turmoil. And not because there's not some selling, you know, liquidity, but what we're starting to see is, I think, increasingly insiders buying in and people sort of seeing the underlying value in those businesses. So, yeah, I think try not to be spooked into inaction or allow other people to set the agenda. I think figure out what you want to do and just sort of try and stick to it without being, you know, too, how can I say, dogmatic in your view.
Let's have a look. Let me put it very simply as a layman and a broadcaster. If you'd been away for the last 2 or 3 years and you'd said, listen, look after my portfolios for me, I'm going off on a sabbatical, and you hadn't had any communication with the JSE Securities Exchange prices, you walked into your office today and you saw Aspen at 65 and you saw Kumba Aina at 400 and you saw Sasol at 278 and you saw Discovery at 105. What would be your immediate reaction? Because you know those companies intimately and they are very, very good companies. You would immediately say to yourself, well, if I'm a hedge fund manager, I'm selling Kumba, I'm buying Sasol, I'm buying Discovery, I'm buying Aspen, and I'm selling whatever other company which I haven't included. But you would do that, and probably then you'd say, and now I'm going away again for 5 years, and my hedge fund will do very well. It's so simple. We just get too close to these share prices, don't you think?
I think we also tend to we all have heuristics. We all sort of suffer from biases. So, you know, you get people who made good money out of Kumba or made good money out of Anglos, ironically, not over a 10-year view, but, you know, but I think there are times to buy, and I think we must be careful always not to sort of say, ah, you know what, this is a good company, it'll always be a good company, and you can sort of buy it regardless of price. I think we have to be very focused on the price we pay, because if you look at Standard Bank now, so on a 3-year view, maybe courtesy of Nenegate, the base effects, you know, maybe the performance doesn't look too bad. But if you look over 5 years, it's hardly done anything. But I would argue it's a better business today. I think they're attacking the cost base. They've done a lot of work in the digitization strategy. You know, Africa's really working nicely now. Am I making sense? Even Liberty is starting to look better. So, yeah, I think to your point, you know, a little while ago, a lot of people would have said, well, you know, you just got to buy the golds now. You just got to hold the resources because, you know, look at iron ore. Look, the share prices are going up, and avoid all these local economy stocks and these SA, you know, biased companies. But now, exactly to your point, I think you want to start doing the exact opposite. And also, I think you want to get out of these sort of stale old blue chips that are just, you know, always riddle the portfolios. I mean, I think Remgro is too cheap right now, but, you know, if I had the opportunity of buying a basket of shares, including a, you know, a Discovery and an Ethos and a City Lodge and a Standard Bank, I'd much rather do that than go and buy something like Remgro or Bidvest, quite frankly. So I think times change and the value pockets come and go. But exactly to your point, I think if you were out of the market for the last 3 years, you'd probably come back and say, well, you know, if I had a few gold shares and I had a few resources, maybe I'd take a little money off the table and I pivot those and, you know, get out of the old stale investment holding companies and pivot it into new things, even like an African Rainbow Capital, which, you know, I think is doing a lot of good things. So, yeah, I think the key is don't let other people set your agenda for you. You know, if you believe that South Africa will actually come out of this okay, not to say we won't have battle scars and damage won't be done, and it's not going to happen. I think as Sim Chabalala said the other day, it's not going to happen overnight. But if you believe there's a fighting chance of us getting this thing together, then truthfully, I don't think Standard Bank has been this cheap since the global financial crisis, and people who bought it then, I think, got very handsomely rewarded. So, yeah, just be brave but not stupid, I suppose, is the best thing I can suggest.
Be brave but not stupid. Graham Koerner is always brave but never stupid, and he is from Koerner Perspective. Great chat, Graham. Thank you so much. That was Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective, and that was the asset class. That podcast was proudly brought to you in association with sharenet.co.za. Visit strictlybusinesspodcast.com and subscribe to receive exclusive content straight to your inbox.